and local with Monica Jay on 92.3 FM and 99.1 FM Talk. This segment is brought to you by HireMeNevada.com.
It's the Monica Jay Show on 92.3 and 99.1 FM Talk, your live and local FM talk for all of Northern Nevada. Today's poll question, should Governor Sisolak rectify Nevada's unconstitutional government union dues scheme? Yes, it's already been looked into, unconstitutional. You want to find out more about the full story, log on to NPRI.org. Wonderful article about that there. That's the thing that gets me with this whole shutdown is the governor and Mayor Sheevy, and I put those two together because they literally are in the same pot. I even have more respect for the mayor of Las Vegas than I do for the mayor of Reno. Just the things that they could have done with the powers that the governor had declaring an emergency. He's declared a financial emergency. He's decided to, when this all started, he declared a state of emergency. But did he declare a public health emergency? Does he really have the power to keep people shut down, to make new regulations, all because of his advisors, his experts that surround him? Yeah, like Dr. Fauci is an expert on viruses. No, Dr. Fauci is a talking head. They have people so confused between Dr. Fauci, the CDC, and WHO, World Health Organization. Nobody knows if they should or shouldn't wear a mask. Nobody knows if it's safe to come out of your house. Trust me, I've been out this whole time and not wearing a mask, and I'm absolutely fine. Now we're supposed to see a resurgence. A resurgence. Will you accept another lockdown? If they tell you to stay in your homes, once again, Governor Sisolak, will you do it? I know I won't. But there are a lot of followers out there, there's a lot of sheep, and there's a lot of scared people because that's the way they are supposed to be. But I have a very special guest right now. Attorney at law, Chet Adams, joins us. And I have to ask, Chet, from a lawyer's point of view, first off, thank you for being on the show today.
Well, thank you, Monica, for inviting me to your show today.
So I have to ask, Chet, is the governor going outside of his authority? I mean, you're a lawyer.
I am. And what brought me to this point was trying to figure out the legality of these executive orders in the form of directives. And that led me to write this paper that I forwarded to you. I mean, who better than to ask to vet that paper than someone who's been acknowledged as one of the top 10 most influential women in Nevada? And I appreciate you accepting the paper.
That was a long time ago.
But, you know, I did write this paper, and, you know, nobody writes papers anymore, do they?
No, they really don't.
They get their messages out in tweets and Facebook posts, and most recently they use spray paint, huh? But no, the paper is about the governor's declaration of this statewide COVID-19 emergency, and it calls for legislative checks on the governor's emergency powers. It addresses how Nevada's constitutional principles of checks and balances between the legislative and executive branches of government have been distorted. And perhaps even more importantly, Monica, it discusses how the Nevada Constitution's emphasis on the principles of a representative form of government and how that principle has been subverted by an extended use of the governor's emergency powers. Now, I use the word extended Because when I read Nevada's law regarding emergencies and the executive branch emergency powers, the law suggests that these powers can only be employed during what I termed as a traditional emergency. And by that, I mean floods, fires, earthquakes, etc. And in the paper, I suggest that these types of traditional emergencies have a what I called a durational quality. In other words, the duration of a fire extends to when a fire is eventually extinguished. The duration of a flood extends until the flood waters eventually subside. And one of the primary purposes of Nevada's emergency laws, as I read them, is to allow Nevada's chief executive, that is the governor, to declare an emergency in order to qualify for federal aid in order to compensate the state for the costs involved when both responding to and repairing the damages caused by the fire, flood, or earthquake.
Right. We see that all the time, Crow.
We do. And when you look at the law, that certainly dovetails with your understanding. But on March 12th, Nevada's governor signed a declaration of emergency for COVID-19. Now, unlike the traditional emergency of a flood or fire or earthquake, this COVID-19 emergency has no real durational quality to it, does it?
No. You know, it's literally at his discretion.
Well, actually, the emergency is not only still ongoing, but it has been extended indefinitely until Nevada's unelected chief medical officer notifies the governor that the health event has been abated. So the governor has delegated his authority to this chief medical officer. And because of the extension of this emergency, what are some of the perhaps you could call them negative impacts upon Nevada that have resulted by this extended emergency and the governor's extended use of his emergency powers? Now, you just talked about the economics of the situation. Just 8 weeks after declaring the COVID-19 emergency, the governor declared a statewide fiscal financial emergency. 2 weeks after that, Nevada's Department of Employment, Training, and Rehabilitation issued its own press release announcing that the unemployment rate in Nevada was the highest in the nation. Another example of some of the ramifications of these extended powers during an extended indefinite time are the social and governmental impacts of these executive orders. They've been used to stay ongoing judicial proceedings and limit the jurisdiction of the Nevada judiciary. They've closed all primary, secondary, public, private, and charter schools. They've closed Nevada's Department of Motor Vehicles, closed the Nevada Board of Parole Commissioners, closed public recreational facilities. These executive orders and directives have impacted and closed many lawfully licensed businesses in Nevada. And Nevada citizens have been prevented from gathering in casinos. And as you mentioned earlier, public meetings, public places, places of worship, and have been ordered to stay in their residences. Now, perhaps one of the most breathtaking aspects of these executive orders or directives is that they have taken the form of unilateral legislation, that is, laws threatening criminal sanctions for actions involving the operation of lawfully licensed businesses and the citizens' exercise of constitutional rights. And my primary concern in all of this is that neither Nevada citizens nor their duly elected legislative representatives have had any kind of a voice concerning either the need, the practicality, economic, social, financial, or spiritual impacts of the legislatively unchecked executive orders or directives issued pursuant to the governor's emergency powers. Monica, did you know that Nevada's constitution does not even give the governor the constitutional power to issue executive orders or directives?
No, I did not know that.
That is not a constitutional power. The Nevada Attorney General opined that the governor has the implied power to issue executive orders. And after that opinion came out, the Nevada legislature enacted a statute that gave the governor the power to enact an executive order pursuant to a public health emergency. Now, how many kinds of emergencies does Nevada law recognize?
You're the lawyer.
Obviously, obviously.
Don't put me on the spot.
Obviously, Nevada law recognizes the traditional emergencies that I've referred to earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And the traditional emergencies are what give the Nevada governor the statutory power to enact all this unilateral legislation, to do all the things that he has done in these directive orders, these directives and executive orders.
So the legislature who's controlled by the Democrats doing this unilaterally just basically circumvented the will of all Nevadans.
Well, actually, in the executive powers associated with a traditional emergency were enacted quite a while ago. And to give the legislature credit, and I don't think it was democratically controlled or controlled by the Democrats at that time. Nevertheless, to give them credit, you've got to understand that in a situation involving a dramatic and serious event, somebody's got to take the lead. Somebody has got to help control that. And that lead should not necessarily be hampered by any type of bureaucratic red tape and everything. You need somebody in there to respond to that emergency immediately. And the legislature has given the governor complete immunity for doing that.
As we've seen, though, from the governor, Chet, he is relying on advisors everywhere around him for everything. It's up to his advisors when businesses are going to open. It's up to his advisors, his experts. And he does not surround himself with qualified people.
Well, that's an issue for another paper and perhaps another interview. But nevertheless, the legislature has recognized the governor's ability to handle this. And certainly I cannot, I rely on other attorneys to do specific areas of law, and I think that it's reasonable to be able to rely on other people. But nevertheless, here's my point. And by the way, those advisors, when it came to issuing this COVID-19 emergency, I've got to hand it to them. Because you would think that a COVID-19 emergency, based upon the respiratory problems and those kinds of things, and the fact that his chief health advisor told him that a state of emergency exists. What kind of emergency do you believe the governor used? What law did he use? Did he use the public health emergency or the traditional health emergency powers?
The traditional.
He did. And arguably, had he declared a public health emergency, he may not have been able to use those extended powers associated with the traditional emergency. So, in other words, Nevada law is very broad and gives the governor the power to declare an emergency, a traditional emergency, on his discretion. If the governor believes that there is an emergency out there, even if it's based upon a health event, he is not required to declare a public health emergency, although that statutory framework is available to him.
Yeah, Chet, I have to take a quick break, but will you hang on the line
Sure.
and just spend a few more minutes with me, because you know, there's also a question about lawyers that I want to ask you right after this. On 92.3.
You got a lawyer joke for me.
No joke. Just an honest question. Here on 92.3 and 99.1 FM Talk.
99.1. The FM News and Talk of Northern Nevada. KKFT.
92.3 and 99.1 FM Talk, live and local FM Talk for all of Northern Nevada. It's the Monica Jay Show with a very special guest, Chet Adams, attorney at law. Thank you, Chet, for hanging on the line and coming back as we continue our conversation on Governor Sisolak and his declarations. What was your last opinion there that you were putting out before I cut you off?
No, my suggested solution, and it's just a suggestion. The whole purpose behind all of this is to get people thinking about this and to get people listening to different narratives. My suggestion is to create a legislative bipartisan subcommittee, and the law would be amended to declare that the governor can only declare an emergency for 30 days. After the end of the 30 days, the emergency would expire as a matter of law unless this bipartisan subcommittee extends it in an additional 30 days. And the legislative subcommittee could look at all an array of issues concerning the emergency. Why was it called? How does it impact? Cities and counties would have the ability to go before the subcommittee and ask that they be opted out of the emergency or any executive orders or directives, and to give people a voice through their elected representatives during
the thing that I find most troubling is the fact that, you know, this was all shut down for COVID-19, and yet the rurals have not seen the cases of this so-called deadly virus, and they're still shut down and losing money, and that's not, I hate to use the term fair, but it's not fair to them. Frankie Sue Del Papa, the last AG that I even respected, she opined that the governor can declare emergency, mandate curfew, etc. But we've had just mayors doing that. How are they held responsible when this stuff is just, it's like it's better to do it and ask forgiveness later than see if they actually have the ability to do it, the right to do it?
Well, the laws relating to the traditional emergencies give the political subdivisions and cities immunity for actions taken in accordance with or pursuant to the declared emergency. Now, does a mayor have the legal authority to declare an emergency and shut down their businesses and order their citizens to stay inside? If it's done pursuant to what the governor has directed or has opined in an executive order, the chances are probably going to, and the balance is probably going to fall on the side of the mayor. Nevertheless, I think that the mayors, and I've always been a firm believer that unless it says so in the law, I've always been very conservative when I interpret and apply the law, that they are, in fact, taking a chance. I did, however, have an opinion on one of our mayors that essentially declared an emergency and ordered their businesses shut down without the benefit of the governor's executive order or the governor's declaration of an emergency. I did
opine
that
we can put it out there.
But it was my opinion at that time that the mayor did not have that legal authority to do that. But that opinion, my opinion, was mooted 2 days later when the governor came out with his COVID-19 emergency. But that's just my opinion. And an opinion, you get two lawyers in a room and you're going to have four different opinions. So, you know, for what it's worth, and just like this paper, that's all it is an opinion. But nevertheless, I haven't heard anybody in our community or in our state talking about this. I've joined the chorus of complaining and grousing about what the governor has done, but I haven't seen any suggestions on how to address this. And that was the impetus behind the paper, Monica.
Well, I'm glad you did, because that has been a concern of mine, and I believe a lot of listeners, is that we are not being represented by our representatives. They're silent. And what concerns me the most is the lack of direction that, you know, we're going to take this a month. You know, we're going to just keep going and going. And people are losing their livelihoods. They're losing their jobs. Chet, people have committed suicide. People have gone back to drugs and alcohol. People are being abused in their own homes. It's just not right. Yet when you look at the governor's actions and the mayor's action and inaction, it seems to be really not a big worry for them. I mean, how can we have our community shut down because of this virus, and yet thousands of people can go out, get in a group together, cause havoc to a city with rioting, and that's okay? But people opening up their businesses restriction-free is not. Where are the lawyers? Where are the lawsuits against this? It's like nobody ever wants to take on government.
Well, you know, I know a lot of people who don't mind it. But nevertheless, those concerns that you raise, I think, are very valid. And those are the types of concerns that should be presented to this legislative subcommittee. And the impact, not only by the citizens through their representatives, and I pointed out that this idea of a representative form of government and these checks and balances and separation of powers were part of the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers. And Nevada's mm-hmm. Constitution goes back to Virginia's colonial constitution, for crying out loud, when it comes to separation of powers. These are the types of concerns that and the type of representation that people should have in this legislative subcommittee. But until that law is amended, the people aren't going to take on the government simply because
of
the
law. And with 1,500 bill drafts, this is nothing that will probably be worked on. But, Chet, I got to let you go. I got a Fox News break here. I am going to publish, with your permission, I'm going to publish your paper that you sent to me on my webpage, so everybody can take a look at it, and hopefully we can build from there, because not enough people are preparing for this happening again. Chet Adams, attorney at law, thank you so much for joining me today. And yes, I will definitely have you back on to talk about other issues. We'll make you the show attorney. We'll give you that that title. So
the whipping boy of the show, yeah.
That's right, the legal whipping boy. All right, Chet Adams, thank you so much. Hey, we got a quick break here with Fox News. Let's take it, and we'll be back on 92.3 and 99.1 FM Talk.
The talk starts here. Get the conversation going. Call now.
Hello?
99.1 KKFT. For Smith and Mason Valley, 92.3 FM Talk.
It's the Monica Jay Show on 92.3 and 99.1 FM Talk. Talk about armchair quarterbacking. Everybody is coming out of the woodworks and dissecting George Floyd's death. Celebrities coming forward and paying for elaborate services and gold coffins and making George Floyd a martyr, which he should not be turned into a martyr. Maybe he turned his life around, but he had led a life of drugs and blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what? Guess what? Law enforcement didn't know that at the time. You watch the video, and I'm still confused about how many different angles and how many different videos are actually coming out with all this. So this was just sent to me. Check out Dr. Michael Baden's autopsy of George Floyd. He did not die of asphyxiation. Basically, he had a bad heart from drug use and was reacting to fentanyl that was in his system. You know what? George Floyd is dead. The officers involved, they're going to be on trial. They've all been arrested and charged. What we need to do is enforce the law, because more riots are going to be coming. This is the playbook of the left, of the progressives, of the Marxists, of the whatever you want to call them, to destroy this country. We've got a dialogue at least going now, because we have to protect good officers, and we have to get rid of bad ones and make sure that they don't go into another community in another state, someplace else, and do something bad to others. Just received this from DJ. I'm a retired police officer. We conducted investigations of our officers when we received citizens or officer complaints. California Civil Service often overturned discipline cases, including terminations, which caused city attorneys and HR officials to raise the bar for termination to a ridiculous standard. DJ, that's almost for any profession out there now. You just can't fire people. I mean, it's incredible. You got to have everything documented 10 times over, you know, for a year in advance. In this litigious society, qualified immunity is the only protection good officers have. If you take that away, you will effectively cripple law enforcement's ability to protect and serve. Stop the good work officers do. Cause many to leave police work at a time when recruiting qualified candidates is difficult. If you think you have some bad cops now, wait until they further lower the standards. Respectfully, DJ. GJ, thank you so much for sending that in. You know, here we have a story that's just breaking, that we have, a vice principal, the vice principal of Yerington Intermediate School, arrested for multiple charges related to child pornography. Once again, who knew? How long did they know? Has this person taught at other locations? Who do we trust the most? We trust the police, and we trust the teachers and the principals to take care of the children. And we trust the police and firemen to take care of all of us. When you lose that trust, when you diminish that trust, only chaos can ensue. Let's go to Mike on the talk and text line at 884-9910. Wants to talk about teachers and police. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Monica. A lot of things to say here. First, you know, this comment by the chief of police in Houston that they're going to prevent police from going for the neck is ridiculous. Almost every fight they go into is a fight for their life, and you can't take that away from them. This is insane. I want to comment.
You know, Mike, let me comment on that, because, you know, there are two different kinds of chokeholds. There's a chokehold with just your arm, where, you know, when you can get your elbow in there, the trachea still has a little bit of room to breathe.
Rear naked choke, I know.
It's these chokeholds with the baton that crushes the trachea that should not, I think, be allowed. But if you can do it with your arm safely, I don't think it should be banned. Because, like you said, every fight is a fight for their life.
Especially with a cop with a gun. When men get into fights, all animals go immediately to the neck. I agree with you, we have to maintain law and order. And I've been in Reno a long time. And take this any way you want, and then I'm going to get to the point. You've come a long way since that Your Idiotic Show with Ross and Monica. When I first came, when I first came to Reno and I turned on the conservative station and I hear one sexual innuendo after another and I hear somebody laughing, and I was shocked. And I'm glad to hear you're serious. Now, let me get to the point. You've evolved. I know it's a left. Let me get to the point. Here's my criticism of the right. When you consistently, one group, I'm talking about the Republicans, consistently put down teachers as wussies. When you consistently put down government, you create a vacuum. When you praise only entrepreneurs, only men who make money, and people in the military, you create a vacuum. When you will give an opening teacher $42,000, what do you think is going to happen? Who do you think goes into those professions? This is what in psychology is called cognitive dissonance. We have to, you know, start teachers off at $60,000, $65,000. We have to respect them. This goes back to William F. Buckley in the 70s or 60s. Very famous quote. I used to watch him on TV. I've always been fairly right-wing. You know who Buckley is?
Mm-hmm.
When he would, you remember his show with all his serpentine body movements and facial movements, when he said, you know, those that can do and those that can't teach. And this is repeated thousands of times by conservatives. You see, there's a psychological issue here. You might disagree. Liberals go into helping professions, social workers, teaching, government. They want to change society. When you have these right-wingers that praise to the sky people who make money, which is, in a sense, energy coming into me, not energy going out into society. I don't want to use the word selfish. What do you think is going to happen when it's consistently demeaning these two professions?
I think you're completely wrong that conservatives are constantly diminishing these professions. What I've said in the past are teachers need to have their hands untied. Teachers are being held back from actually teaching what should be taught in public school and not pandering to the progressives out there. And they should be able to discipline students who get out of line. They are not allowed to do that anymore because progressives find their ways into positions of power and they create these regulations, restrictions, whatever you want to call them. And the people that have to actually teach, who are in the room, who are in the classrooms doing the work, they're the ones who suffer. I am totally for administration is out of hand.
Right.
Okay, we shouldn't have 10 to 12 deputy superintendents making over $200,000 a year. They should be gone, and those teachers should be making the money. The liberal left, the Democrats, Governor Sisolak, promised teachers a raise. Did they get it? No. In the long run, no, they did not. Actually, they got taxed more because they were charged more for their PERS. For their retirement systems.
I agree with you there, but why is the left in control of education? We need more transparency. It's a psychological thing of the right, idolizing only business in the military. Only business. You're a tough businessman, and these other people are a bunch of, incompetent wusses. Why are they in control?
I don't believe that you look at the majority of the people who went and supported Trump at these rallies, which, by the way, are going to return. Those were not entrepreneurs. Those were not big CEOs of companies. They were working class people. And the big CEOs, they don't like Trump. So the Republicans, once they get into a certain level of power, it is not your average everyday Republican. But Mike, I'll tell you there that the left works to get into positions of administration.
Absolutely. They,
the left doesn't own the schools. They don't own education. They own positions of power in those different places so they can make the rules. And then the teachers, who a lot of them I would say the majority, from what I've heard, are Republicans. They're conservative that just want to do their jobs. They want to be there with the kids. The left wants positions of power so they can make the rules, because it starts from the community level and goes up.
All right, Monica, you're giving me a lot of time. Everybody wants power. With only the left wants power. The right basically wants a theocracy. And the left is basically secular and adheres to Darwinian evolution, which I don't agree with. Everybody wants power. You want
the
power.
The left wants destruction of the freedoms of the United States. That's basic. They want to be with the UN. They want one world government. And I will agree with you on one thing, Mike, and that is, it doesn't matter if it's left or right. It's all a part of the same bird. Left wing, right wing, it's all a part of the same. Because your average person does not pay enough attention to politics to understand that it is about power. It's not about just living and enjoying a simple life and reaping, you know, the benefits of what you do, what you enjoy to do. It's about power and control. And that's what people on the left and that's what people on the right are actually doing. I would urge anybody that wants to pull back the curtain, if you are brave enough to actually see and understand what is going on, then you can either go to any of my Facebook pages, all three of them, and on there, you will find a three-hour video. It's actually pinned to the top of the Monica J 99.1 FM Talk page. If you really want an education, if you are brave enough to understand, because there's ugly things there, and that's why I say if you are brave enough, because there's a lot of ugliness in this world that you do not see that is making the decisions. And it is on the left, and it is on the right, and they actually work together. All right. We'll be back to wrap up the show after this quick spot break here on 92.3 and 99.1 FM Talk.
Live, local FM Talk. KKFT. For Smith and Mason Valley. 92.3 FM Talk.
Anybody else have anything they want to share today?
This is where to say it. Call now at 884-9910.
It's the Monica J. Show on 92.3 and 99.1 FM Talk. The lines are closed right now and blocked because I want to be 100% honest and open with you. I have been ridiculed by reporters in the mainstream so-called media because I have reposted things from an organization called QAnon. I read everything. I always have. I'm very interested. I want to know. I want to know why. I want to know who. I want to know what. I don't like to be in the dark. I use social media. I use YouTube. I use blogs. Wherever I can find information. And I don't use mainstream sites like Google, because that doesn't always give you the whole picture, the whole story. I urge people to do their own research and find out what is really going on in this world, because it's not about us. It's not about a primary election we just had. It's about the general in November. And you can believe what you want to believe. You can say about me what you want to say. But I want you to understand, in my point of view, this is about corruption, it's about control, and it is about evil. And it's not from this generation, it's not from the last generation. This has been going on for decades and decades and decades. If you don't want to use social media, that's fine. I urge you to at least go onto YouTube and just search for the term the fall of the cabal and just watch it. It's 3 hours long, but it will go on or go through in literally minutes. You won't even realize it when it's done. I need you to open your eyes. If we're going to save this country, if we're going to save this world, if we're going to save the children, if we're going to save just happiness, then you need to open your mind and get out of your own little world. Tonight, veterans, please, everybody, Famous Dave's, 5:30. Barbecue's on Trump, but the drinks are on yourself. It's going to be a great evening. Social distancing, of course. Out on the patio. I hope I see you there. Have a great day, everybody. And just believe that there is something better for us all out there. We'll be back tomorrow on 92.3 and 99.1 FM Talk. I love you and believe in you.